on this episode of Skeptico.
Ultimately, what you're looking at is, how is shifting consciousness, how is that making an impact on the decisions and the directions we choose to take as human beings when we're doing the things we do daily in life? So whether that be an inventor who starts, who shifts their consciousness and or perception, I hate to make it sound so mystical, but they shift their perception on something and suddenly they now go, oh, okay, well, I can now create a product, or I can now do something that, isn't so harmful to this, or doesn't destroy this, while it's doing this.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and if you've listened to the show very much, you know that one of the things I really like to do is reach out to other people who are taking some of the same information we've discovered here on Skeptico and applying it in new and different ways and talking to different groups of people about that information. And I think that's what today's show is about. Joe Martino founded Collective Evolution a few years ago, and the website has turned into a huge success, not only in terms of traffic, but in terms of disseminating information about what one might do with these new insights we're gaining about how science really works, how our political system really works, and our consciousness, both individually and collectively, can come to bear on the problems we face. It was great getting a chance to meet Joe and hear about all the exciting things that are going on at Collective Evolution. I hope you enjoy this dialogue with Joe Martino. Today we welcome Joe Martino from Collective Evolution to Skeptico. Collective Evolution is kind of a juggernaut of information about consciousness and the new emerging realization that we all have of how we fit into this world, this materialistic world that we find ourselves in. Joe, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining.
Thanks, Alex. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate the invite.
Joe, can we start just by having you tell folks a little bit about Collective Evolution, what it's about, and then if you can, a little bit about your story, which I think is very interesting and will connect with a lot of people in terms of your reason for starting this organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Collective Evolution is ultimately a platform that looks at a number of things in a number of different ways. Now, to get into the specifics, in a simple sense, Collective Evolution is here to open people up. It's here to get us thinking in different ways, welcoming in new perspectives, being open to the fact that what we think we might know is, the nature of reality may not actually be, and that it's cool and it's fun to explore that. And there's plenty of stuff out there to actually explore that with. Like, we're covering things through articles, we're covering things through videos, we've made documentaries in the past, we've held events. All these sorts of things are helping people to sort of find that inspired life that they can be living and explore their own consciousness and explore this world in a way that allows us to sort of evolve as a unit here on Earth. I think it's no secret that when you ask a lot of people, what do you think of the state of the world? How do things feel? And, from a more spiritual perspective, people would say, everything's perfect. It is the way it is. And I think many, I would agree with that. However, there's also this internal push or this desire for most people to say, hey, there's something that's going on in the world that's not quite right. There's something happening and we need to make a shift towards that. And, Collective Evolution helps people prepare for that in terms of information, in terms of internal reflection, and in terms of understanding what's going on out there.
So, Joe, that's an awesome introduction, but it's extremely broad. Maybe help people connect with your personal experience with this material and what kind of drove you to start Collective Evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it was kind of those moments when I was in school and not really sure entirely what I wanted to do. Was kind of feeling like, you're getting pressures from your friends, from your family to figure out, okay, what's your career? What's it going to be? What are you going to go study in school? And ultimately, what are you going to be happy doing the rest of your life? And, you know, I thought to myself, I don't know the answer to that. And I had had all these burning questions in me as I was growing up about, you know, how the world really functioned. And, you know, you have these little insights here and there about various systems and infrastructures we have in our society that just kind of didn't seem right or kind of seemed off. And, you know, the more I kind of explored that and searched through that, you know.
Excuse me, let me interject. What were some of those first inklings you had that things just didn't quite seem right?
Yeah, for me, a lot of it was through education, you know, going through elementary school, high school, and just feeling like in terms of education, it wasn't something that made sense to me. I always had questioned it. I'd always seemed like it was almost like a limitation of an individual and of the mind and of, you know, thought. And to me, it was like, here's this fantastic opportunity to take young people and kind of really expand them, really bring them up to speed as to what we know and what's happening, but really just keep them exploring and keep their minds open. And I always found school to be more of like, just here's what you need to know, just like do it and shut up and move on, you know? And for me, that whole thing, ever since I was even in elementary school, grade 5, 6, I was talking about things like this. And you know, so it lasted a long time for me. And I didn't want to continue going to school once I got to the edge of high school there. But it was something that I through fear and through pressures from other people, just kind of decided to do. And through that, I started with engineering because I liked building things. I enjoyed working with my hands. And I thought engineering was going to be something that that was good for me. And very quickly, I realized that it just wasn't fitting well. I didn't enjoy going every day to school and studying the stuff and all the rigidity and so many classes and this, that. And it was just, to me, it was too much. I was becoming very down. I was becoming very depressed. And of course, that makes you think. That pulls you back to an internal journey of discovering more about yourself. And it was in and around that time that I really started to continue to explore myself and look at my beliefs and you know, how they were formed and how I saw the world. And of course, through that, you're also researching and you're discovering more about what's going on. And so you're starting to realize, oh yeah, the world isn't quite, you know, what we've seen. The financial system works the way it is. You know, we're sort of born into this idea that as soon as you graduate, you kind of got to just work towards, you know, having a house and having a kids and doing all this stuff. It almost felt like slavery in a sense. And so for me, it was like, what can I do, or how can I sort of fall into something that I really loved, that I really felt passionate about? And what ended up happening was I left school and because at a point of where I was most down, I left school and it was kind of that feeling of like, okay, this was a decision I made for me. This was a decision I decided to do because I felt good about it. And so that led to, you know, wanting to put my experiences, what I had, you know, been through in my life and what I had come to understand both spiritually and, you know, systematically in the world and all that sort of stuff. Even though I was only, you know, 20 something years old, I felt like I had been through so many different experiences. I wanted to put it out there. I wanted to share it. And that's what Collective Evolution was at the beginning. It was, here's how we can share experiences about this, you know, apparent shift in consciousness that was going on in the world where it's like, okay, people are starting to really think differently and they're looking for information. And every person that I came across or spoke to seemed to have this sort of same feeling of, you know, there's something not quite right. There's some feeling that everybody was in this mode of sort of searching a little bit and not searching in the sense of the forever chase for more, but more so searching as in like a curiosity. You know, I know there's more to the world. I know there's more to myself. I know there's more to consciousness. And that is what, you know, inspired Collective Evolution as becoming a platform and a breeding ground in a sense for content that would help people explore that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it touches on a couple of things that are really interesting and intersect with some of the things that we've talked about here on Skeptico. First, I really want to dig into this educational component of it. And, you know, because one of the things we've discovered on Skeptico and my approach was just to say, hey, science must have the answer to these bigger picture questions, the kind of questions you were really faced with. Who am I? Why am I here? My instinct was to look towards science. I had pursued school and thought school was the answer. It had served me well in terms of getting a job. And I thought I wanted to make education my career. But when I got into it, as I dug deeper, I found that when it came to these big picture questions, science wasn't only ill-equipped to answer them, but they seemed to be intentionally leading me in the wrong direction and towards some kind of assumptions about consciousness that are just completely, not only completely wrong, but dehumanizing in a way that I hadn't fully understood. And did you come to a similar kind of realization? And what did that really feel like to you, that hopelessness in terms of education as it relates to consciousness, spirituality, and some of these bigger picture questions? Did you connect all that stuff at the beginning, and how long did it take you to make some of those connections?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. For me, I grew up Catholic, so I grew up under the idea that, you know, God, you know, created, you know, the world, everything, you know, Jesus, you know, was sent down to save us for our sins, all this sort of thing. And so all the questions were apparently answered in the Bible. You know, my big thing I remember asking when I was in school was asking my religion teacher, you know, so who created God? And then, of course, right. You know, that's a very difficult question. He doesn't know how to answer that. And it was okay that, oh, you know, God was just there. You know, okay, well, we could play with that idea. But, you know, it was always that question that was just odd for them to answer. And so, you know, by the time I was in grade, I think 7 and 8, the religion thing for me was, it didn't really entirely, you know, it didn't sit and resonate fully with me. It was, I still had questions. I still wanted to explore. And of course, there's, you know, sort of what you could say the other side to it, which is, you know, from the scientific perspective, there's evolution. But, you know, as good as it is as a theory, and as much as it sort of covers some very interesting ground, if you truly, honestly, and I don't think a lot of people have and often don't do this, but if you actually look at the evidence that builds the theory for evolution, it's really not that deep. It's not built on as much information as we probably would think or would like to hope that there was. And so that left me thinking, like, okay, we actually don't know. You know, not only do we not know much about our history as human beings on this planet and how far it goes back, but, you know, we really don't understand much about who we are, why we're here, and all these sorts of things, which is fine. I don't think we necessarily have to have all those answers. Sometimes there's excitement in the mystery of it. But nonetheless, there's an everyday implication of, like, okay, so what does that mean about, you know, how we go about, why are we teaching people, or why are we talking to people in a manner where it almost makes us feel like we are these drones just walking about our world? When you look at the world, people are typically very unhappy. They're very unfulfilled. They're very, you know, just things don't feel right. And if I look back, okay, well, how are we educated? How are we brought up in culture? I mean, obviously, growing up in the Western world, I look at Western world culture. And you look at all these things and you start saying, okay, we're not doing something right here, or there's something off. There's something that is not leading people to a point where we're actually feeling good, we're feeling happy, we're feeling excited about living. And that's when you realize, you know, sort of how that system functions of education, going from one thing, preparing people just to be sort of, you know, worker bees in a world where you're supposed to kind of just put your head down and work towards having a house, supporting your family, having kids, and maybe vacationing once in a while. And that's supposed to be life. And anytime you have these big questions, yeah, you can't really go to areas to really explore it and discover it. It's, you're either going faith-based, which is difficult, or you're going, you know, science-based, which to some people in the field of evolutionary theory, they're very rigid about it. It's very, this is the answer. We know this for a fact, but that's incredibly misleading, number one. And otherwise, you're kind of like, where do I go to really explore this stuff and really go deep? And I think, yeah, we don't really have, or I would say it's changed a lot in the past probably 10 years, and even more so in the past 5 years, where stuff's popping up a lot more. But prior to that, it's very difficult to really explore it or be exposed to it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting idea I want to get into, is, you know, the juxtaposition between our educational system and this false dichotomy, false forced choice that we've been given, that you outlined really good. You know, okay, here's your choice: atheistic science or fundamentalist religion. Those are your only two options. Those are the only choices you get. And when you sit back and say, you know, that doesn't really, work for me. That doesn't really feel right for me. You really don't have any other place to go. So now you're right. A lot of people are feeling the same thing and answers are popping up in between. But the other thing I like about CE is you have a sense for kind of the politicalization of that question, because at some point you do step back and go, okay, things are messed up. Why are they so messed up? And why are they insisting so hard that we hold to these ideas that are clearly out of date and not working for people? What is really the agenda behind that? Do you want to talk about that transition for you and to what extent you like to go down or are willing to go down that path of the politicalization, movement-oriented, change-oriented kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at the world as it is today, you know, you have potentially, you know, we'll call it for just for the definition's sake and ease of explanation, you have sort of the kind of the conspiracy-ish side where people are seeing it in a very aggressive, like everybody's out to get us, everybody's out to do this, everybody's out to, you know, screw us and the elites and all this sort of stuff. They have this gigantic agenda and every single thing that comes out is something that's there to harm us. And then you have sort of the other side, which is no, the world is just a facet of human evolution and our desire for greed and power and to, you know, it's natural to want to kill each other and it's natural to want to, you know, take advantage and be competitive and to do all these things. And that's just the way humans are. Humans are shit and that's it. You know, that's the other side. And then I believe that the truth is sort of basically right dab in the middle there. You have, you know, a mixture of sort of humanistic characteristics that are playing out, i.e. we all come with an ego. We all come with a sense of a separation to some degree. A lot of it is learned behavior. A lot of it is stuff that, you know, we pick up through our parents and through education and through our friends and everybody around us, through our cultures. That's all kind of there just sort of separating us and sort of doing these things. And at the same time, yeah, I totally believe there's a small number of people when you compare it to the size of the population who are through an agenda who are playing out a systematic game of control and game of power. And
that is, after all, our history. To deny that is to deny not only our history, but our own personal experience, whether we see it at the corner store and how they set gasoline prices with the guy across the street whose sign they can see, or whether it's in our own personal cutting of corners or trying to get ahead for our own advantage. I mean, we know this stuff is, at as you said, part of our human nature. I am always amazed when people can't extrapolate that up and say, well, why do you think that guy who's a billionaire isn't playing the same game just at a much larger scale? Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible that you know, that they would be playing out in the same way. I totally agree with that. The one thing that I do think, you know, and this is where we go into kind of, you know, the intuitive nature of a human being, or, you know, the connection to something that we're more or something that's different, is I think a lot of the things that we've seen play out in our recorded history that would suggest that it may be part of our nature to always want to take advantage of another. I don't know that that's human nature in a sense as much as it is a factor of some of our environments and some of the way we've sort of experienced the planet, and that under certain environments and certain conditions, we wouldn't be like that necessarily. I think there's a lot of, from a scientific perspective, I think there's a lot to sort of argue in that regard. There's a lot of, you know, sort of studies on both sides that have looked at.
No, that's an excellent point. I would totally welcome that distinction that you're making. So please go ahead.
Yeah, and so I think it's important to look at that, because I think it's easy to sometimes get into the realm of, oh, well, that's, you know, human nature. And I think what that can do, and this goes back to the mission of CE, is that can make us look at the world without a sense of possibility and without a sense of sort of infinite possibility to a degree. And I think as we're looking and as we're advancing, I mean, when we're in each moment, we sometimes think, oh, well, we can't really advance that much farther, or we actually know a lot. Well, it's like we do know a lot, and, you know, it may seem like we can't advance farther, but in 50 years, you're going to be saying the same thing, and you're going to look back at the 50 years previous and go, holy crap, I can't believe how much we've advanced. I can't believe how much things are different. And I believe what we're seeing now and where this has become so interesting is we're seeing a very big shift, other than just technologically, but also in human consciousness and where how people are thinking and how they're connecting to things and how they're connecting to one another. And I think ultimately where that shift leads is us to looking at our world and going, wait, what is human nature? What is this experience we've been having? Why have we thought all this time that, you know, we can only be this way? You know, I was just speaking to an oncologist prior to this and he was saying, one of the biggest turning points, and this is very difficult to study from a medical perspective, but one of the biggest turning points that a patient will have is the moment they decide that they want to get better. It almost seems like any treatment plan you give them, they will start getting better based on that. And, you know, he was also saying that, you know, when it comes down to it, the thoughts or the idea of a placebo, but just like the thoughts of something can also impact, you know, so much of their experience with getting better. So you got to think there is a choice. There is a being open. There is a level of consciousness involved in so much of the things we do. And if we continue to go under the guise of this is how we are, this is how we have to be, and this is just the nature of who we are, you're sort of limiting the possibility of what we can create and also how we can live and treat each other, right? And so I think, you know, kind of widening our minds and expanding our consciousness on that makes a huge impact on what we actually see happen in the world.
That's awesome. And you guys really do a terrific job of that. And I really don't see many other people threading that path the way that you do, that on one hand, you're open and honest about some of the problems and the enormity of the problems and how they sometimes seem insurmountable, both at a personal level and at this kind of societal and political level. But at the same time, you seem to have a real spirit of having a genuine sense of hope about the future and hope about this consciousness shift, because that always kind of immediately sends off alarm bells for me when people say, oh, there's this big consciousness shift going on. And I want to go, well, you know, we can look at it one of two ways. You can still find a lot of places that aren't shifting the way that we'd like. But I hear your message as being something uniquely different. And that's that, yes, there is a shift. Come join us. Let's be part of that shift. Let's make it happen. Let's not just talk about it passively happening, but let's talk about being a part of making it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sometimes the challenge, is that it's like, you know, we can talk about it, but, you know, wisdom is often, you know, putting it into practice, right? And, you know, as much as it's easy to talk about these things around a campfire or you know, around a table with tea with friends, it comes down to, okay, well, how are you actually going to implement that? And ultimately what you're looking at is how is shifting consciousness, how is that making an impact on the decisions and the directions we choose to take as human beings when we're doing the things we do daily in life. So whether that be an inventor who starts, you know, who shifts their consciousness or perception, you know, I hate to make it sound so mystical, but, you know, they shift their perception on something and suddenly they now go, oh, okay, well, I can now create a product, or I can now do something that, you know, isn't so harmful to this, or doesn't destroy this while it's doing this. So now they're seeing things in a bit more of a holistic sense. You know, to me, that's a shift in consciousness, where now they're acting, their actions are now, you know, in unison with seeing the world in a different way. You know, it's very similar to a person who has a perception shift towards another culture, and suddenly they're much more open, you know, and willing to accept other cultures. And, you know, now you see levels of peace and cooperation happening between, you know, those two people. And again, that's another big shift in consciousness. And that's something where, as you do it and you begin to act on it, you start making systematic change. And that's, I think, where the key is. And you can look at the political race happening in the United States right now. It's such a gigantic reflection of, you know, consciousness and the shift in consciousness and how it's actually exposing the entire system of politics for something that it truly is, which is this gigantic fraud of, you know, powerful people, regardless of popular vote and regardless of what the public wants, choosing who they want to be the puppet master for, you know, the big corporations who are funding them. And you have a guy like, you know, Bernie Sanders, for example, and I'm not choosing sides here. I want this to stay very neutral. But, you know, you have a guy like Bernie Sanders who's clearly saying things that are fantastic in terms of, you know, helping to better the state of human beings, the state of people, you know, uniting people, all these sorts of things. And he has public approval. People are loving the ideas that he shares. Now, if politics is truly a representation of public opinion, I mean, you have areas where he's, you know, grabbing 81% of the vote in a state, but the superdelegate's saying, you know what, no, we're going to choose Hillary instead because that's what we're doing. And you scratch your head and go, well, wait a minute. I thought politics was acting in our best interest. I thought my vote mattered. I thought, you know, and it doesn't. And I think it's amazing that people are seeing that. And ultimately, what's great about this is there's a stage for a guy who has something to say that is helping people and opening their minds. And so even if a guy like Bernie were to get voted into power, selected into power, essentially, you know, he's got a stage, and he's been given the opportunity for a lot of people to truly open their minds and expand their perspective about politics, which is ultimately going to change potentially how many people show up at the voting polls, to change, you know, potentially at a point where people gather together and go, you know what, this is bullshit. We don't want to vote in this system anymore. It just doesn't work.
Well, you see, but there's the paradox, isn't it? Because I love some of the stuff you're saying there, but I think the political thing is tough to tackle. But I want to try and tackle it. We never talk about politics on this show, but you've brought it up in a very interesting way, in a couple of ways. One, in that the charade, the theater that it is, exposes the system in a way that, if we're open to it, should be the greatest lesson. Even if we can't change it, it should expose and drive us towards making the other changes that we need so that eventually we can get around and that thing will crumble. I think what a lot of people lose in that, I mean, I think Bernie Sanders is great. I have no affiliation, Republican or Democrat. I think it's completely phony, fake. If we didn't learn that with Obama and Hope and Change, and what a complete turnaround that was, what a complete betrayal of the hope that was invested in that change. I think that should have sobered everyone to how completely corrupt the political system is. But we have to go forward with what it is. The other point that I'd always make is people want to leave Donald Trump out of the equation. And I do not agree with so many of the things that Trump has said. But if we just look back and say, like I do, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I vote maybe Jesse Ventura I'll write in for or something like that. But Trump is hitting the same feeling that people have of hopelessness, of the system is completely corrupt. It needs an outsider. It needs someone from the other side. So, yeah, you have Trump, you have Bernie Sanders. These are people that weren't supposed to be there. And what it's saying from the American public is, we want this thing to be over. To me, that's what they're really screaming. But you won't hear that message. What you'll hear is the sound bites on building a wall or on, you know, hate speech and all the rest of this. What I read from all that is people really, really, really want change, and they almost don't care who it is as long as it's someone who's outside of the system.
Absolutely. I've said this for a little while now, is the idea that, you know, when it comes to Trump and when it comes to Bernie, the reason why I think they're getting so much public attention, especially on social media, is because they are the only, or I shouldn't say only, I mean, I'm sure there's been bits here and there, but the only very obvious folks who seem to come with a sense of genuineness, meaning they're not standing there trying to be, you know, the wolf in sheep's clothing. They're just saying, look, this is what I am. This is what I am. This is what I'm going to say. And that's the reality of the situation. Whereas you have people like Hillary and Ted and all these other front runners out there who are, like, there you can just tell these guys are lying through their teeth. They're being ungenuine. They're trying to, you know, sit there and you know, kind of create a facade around something. And I think that's why a lot of people have even just found interest in Trump and Bernie, is just because they're like, wow, they're singing a different tune, not just in what they're saying, but how they're saying it. And that's inspiring, regardless of sort of what's being said. It's just because of the fact that people are connecting now with something that's more real, meaning they're still going to make educated and informed decisions. They're not just going to pick anybody, or they're not just going to follow anybody's word, but they're choosing real. And that's important. But like you said, I mean, the media all ultimately is not giving as much attention to the people that they want in power, or that they don't want in power, and they're ultimately they're just creating this big charade. Like you said, it's entertainment ultimately is what it is. It's a gigantic entertainment and a way for people to feel like they actually have a choice or a decision in the essential, you know, sort of dictatorship that they're living in that they just don't realize.
Hey, Joe, one last topic I wanted to cover because it came up in our email exchange, and it's obviously very important to me, and I love the way you're approaching it over at CE, because I should mention, you guys don't do the normal kind of just light, fluffy stuff. I mean, let me back that up and say you have some very practical, positive psychology kind of element to what you do, which is great. But you also dig into some things at a depth that I think most people aren't used to for a site of your kind. So we were talking a little bit back and forth about this idea of unscientific. And that's the term that I think you were leading with that I really resonated with, because what it points out to me is that the problem isn't with science per se. The problem is that what we're spoon-fed as science is often unscientific and is used to just prop up and support these other kind of ideas that we're talking about, which lead to some of the despair that we all feel at times. Do you want to talk a little bit about where you're going with this idea of what's unscientific?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what it initially was inspired by is we wanted to create a film based on so much of what we had gone through over the past, you know, 7 years in running a site like this, where, you know, not only have we been reporting on science that was coming out from incredibly respected places, but from people's view, it was not mainstream. And so they were calling it quackery and woo-woo and all this stuff. And it's funny because almost every single thing that we've talked about, whether it be some level of consciousness affecting reality, or some level of controlling your immune system with your thought, or whether it be something along the lines of quantum physics, or you know, even teleportation and stuff like that, where you're looking at these fascinating discoveries that are coming out that are you know, the implications could be gigantic, but everybody says, oh, it's quack, it's woo, it's this, it's that. But now you're now seeing major scientific publications 5 years, 6 years later, now starting to say the same thing. And it's humbling the whole environment, because what's happening is now there's, you know, you're starting to realize like, oh, these people are sort of catching up to it. And you're wondering, is this a widening of their scope of view? Or is it just the nature of the matter of that they cannot keep not reporting on it anymore? And the idea of unscientific comes from the fact that as scientists, you know, the idea is that you generate if you have an idea, or if you have something you want to explore, you know, you generate your hypothesis, and then you do a measured study or a measured case study of what it is that you want to explore. And there's a method that goes along with that to hopefully decrease, you know, limitations, decrease potential for bias, decrease all of this sort of stuff. And so that you can hopefully get an answer. I mean, first and foremost, the idea of measuring and knowing for sure and all these sorts of things is never going to be 100%, and that's okay, but we're trying to get as close as we can, right? That's the idea of science. And when something new is presented, we go, okay, let's test it and study it and see, okay, does this work? Now, some people say, well, by creating an archive of work, of previous work, you know, that should negate a new study that comes in that might say something different. This is some of the arguments that you get. And what I'm saying is that a lot of times what happens is we end up developing dogmatic views of what we think we know and of what we think we've studied to its depth. And what happens is we take those dogmatic views and we turn them into essentially like a religion, which is why I think some of the culture of science has become very religious. And what happens is now we cannot look at the new ideas, the new stuff, in a way that is truly scientific, because we're not even giving it the space. and we're not studying it. We're not looking at it. We're just saying, no, my old stuff that's like 30, 50 years old is negating your new stuff. I don't care how many times you replicate it, it's negating it. And that is unscientific. And I think that's the view of a lot of mainstream influencers out there when looking at stuff. And the other big thing that I believe is entirely unscientific, there's two pieces. The first piece is, you know, buying science and manipulating science. You look at someone like Monsanto, who's able to create a law that says you cannot put out any form of science about our GMO seeds unless we've seen it first. Like, does that make any sense?
Right.
That's unscientific. I hate to say it. And the other side is when, you know, scientific figures will use emotion to make people feel like they're stupid for questioning something that they think they know. And that is something you see on TED's platform a lot. And as much as I love some of what TED has done, I think you're seeing a lot of instances where these scientific figures will come on and they will go, well, we can't really explain something. We don't really know how it works, but we're going to make fun of people who believe in it so that you don't bother looking into it and you don't bother understanding it. It's like, it's the idea of making people feel bad or feel stupid for questioning something that we don't have answers to.
I'm so glad you bring that up about the TED platform, because it's something we've explored a little bit on this show, and the dogmatism is really quite startling. I mean, we had a gentleman, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Rupert Sheldrick, from biologist from Cambridge. Sure, sure, of course you are. But, you know, he and Graham Hancock were banned from TED on talks that they did, and it was just kind of classic. You know, I mean, here's Rupert Sheldrick, Cambridge biologist, saying that science is dogmatic, and he's banned by a secret scientific board that isn't accountable to anybody. I mean, is that the definition of dogmatism right there? And yet it's funny how these institutions kind of form in a way that fits in perfectly with the status quo that they're there to promote and set up. I think it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is more out there, but I'll get to that in a second. I think part of it is, you know, some of these people that are in these positions, I don't think really, they don't know any better. I mean, part of it is they've gone through
their... That's so true.
They're doing it with the best intent, and they haven't realized, they haven't reflected on themselves and how their thoughts have become dogmatic, and it's just become normal to them. And I think that's part of it. The other part of it sometimes is that, you know, these people have an agenda and they know, okay, well, there's a certain level of profit, power, and control that we need to maintain. And so we're kind of going to have to take this route. The other side to it is that in a grander scale, I believe that, you know, these people are playing a role for other people to help us understand and see what happens when we allow ourselves to become so locked in one state of being. And so what's happening is you have this new stuff come out, and these people are going, well, no, this is impossible. And, you know, at first we can't prove it, but then a couple of years down the road, when we prove that, you know, the way people were being was dogmatic through, you know, I guess more science and more discovery, people then get to look and go, wait a minute, why were we so closed-minded to that? We could have potentially missed out on all these sorts of things. And it gets people questioning as a whole. Wow, this whole thing is dogmatic. This is unscientific. We need to shift this, right? And so from a grander, you could say from a universal scale, or from a cosmic scale, or from a, however you want to call it, we're playing roles for each other. And I think ultimately that's an interesting way to look at it from a conscious perspective of, you know, it's not always a bad thing that these people are like this. Yes, it can be dangerous in some cases, but I think ultimately it leads towards us learning and us understanding more. And it's becoming obvious to people that there's something not right. And part of what makes it obvious is not only people questioning it, but people seeing the absurdity. And sometimes the absurdity has to be there for them to realize it.
And then linking it back in the way that you're talking about to maybe a deeper, you know, dare we say, spiritual kind of meaning that it might have. And what you just went through right there, I want to stop and just compliment you on again, because I think that's very difficult to keep your foot in all three of those camps. You know, one is at the surface level. What is the content of that TED talk? And is it scientific or unscientific, from a purely rational, logical, reasonable, or reason-based kind of perspective, which you did. And then you went to number two and you said, okay, if I take a more conspiratorial point of view, which, let's be real, you know, everything doesn't happen just accidentally. Some things are driven by larger forces. And then you step there. And then you stepped to the third point, which most people are so afraid to go to, and that's the what could be the larger spiritual meaning for this. And even if we admit that we can't conclusively say that we know that or understand that, but at least explore that. I mean, I think that really is the antidote for the hopelessness that you talked about at the beginning that drove you to create CE. I really think it's that holistic kind of view of things that you're doing that really helps people find comfort. I know that's been my path. If I don't have all three of those elements, all three of those plates spinning at the same time, I can't really feel like I'm you know, keeping everything up there juggling. Does that, any of that resonate for you?
Absolutely. It's the idea that, you know, where I believe there's a number of characteristics to a human being. We have a physical body. We have a mind that has a left and right brain that, you know, controls creativity and logic among a number of other things. And then we also have hearts. And what we're starting to understand is that the heart has a measurable aura. It has a measurable frequency that emanates information. This is being studied in depth, right? And you may have spoken to people at, you know, the Institute of Heart Math and that sort of thing who's doing stuff like this. And the more we're understanding, the more we are conscious beings. Like, we don't know to what extent, what exactly that means, what exactly that looks like yet from a physical materialistic perspective. However, that doesn't mean we should be afraid to explore it or talk about it, or that we should shun ideas like that. Because when we do stuff like that, all it's really revealing is our fear in our own state of knowledge and position that we currently hold, which I believe is kind of sometimes the danger of things. If we're not, it's not to say that we need to be never hold on to anything or never say, oh, we know this or we don't know this. It's more so to say, like, you know, to maintain a level of curiosity and openness to new things, because we're always going to constantly learn. We're always going to constantly change, grow, and expand as beings. And that means in our information too, in our beliefs and what we understand. And so it's incredibly important not to to stay rigid, because we're understanding new stuff all the time. And, you know, like you said, you know, dare we say a spiritual side, well, that's like saying we're going to deny a whole aspect of our human existence. You know, it's been around for centuries, been around for thousands and thousands of years, that there's some level of spiritual connection, you know, the wise people from back in the day. The challenge is that religion has sometimes given a negative view towards spirituality, which then people lump all of the mystics and all of the meditators and all of the yogis and all of the, you know, these interesting type of people back in the day that were coming up with this stuff, that were meditating, that had these experiences. They lump them all into the religious category. They're operating off of faith. Well, the reality is a lot of these people are operating off of experience, and without, you know, psychedelics or any term form of enhancers or anything like that, it was their own experiences. And I think it's unfair, and it's also limiting to view it in that way, because the reality is if we're willing to acknowledge we have a body and we have a mind, and now that we're measuring, you know, these aspects of our spiritual being, we should be willing to say, yes, we have that as well. And that can also be something that's interesting, i.e. you can now, you know, have a hunch about something. You can have an intuitive feeling about something. And, you know, those feelings can lead you towards great things, but you have to develop them. You have to pay attention to them. You have to understand them, much like you understand, you know, your words or your thoughts, right? It's a whole area that I believe we're coming into as a race of humans on this planet. You know, and that's ultimately, you know, what I think it comes down to is we're learning this whole other aspect of ourselves.
That's great, Joe. Tell folks a little bit more about what they're going to find when they go to Collective Evolution, collective-evolution, and in particular, how they might become more involved in it, and what's coming up from you guys that might be interesting in the way of films or projects that people might be interested in.
For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, if you go to Collective Evolution on the website, we're going to have content ranging from anything from health to consciousness. We cover news from a bunch of different perspectives. We jump into science and tech and, you know, lifestyle, all these sorts of things. Ultimately, the goal is to expand our consciousness, our way of thinking. To help people live an inspired life. You know, another big passion of the project is to really, you know, push people towards do something that's meaningful to you. I mean, even if it can't be your career, you know, do something that's very meaningful to you each day, because that is very powerful for you as a person to be doing things that, you know, are about your gifts, about what you are interested in, what feels valuable to you. Like, we all come here with that. And it's a personal message of mine that I think is very important, that, you know, we have to cultivate that. That's huge for your own happiness. So that's, you know, you're going to get that on Collective Evolution, in terms of the website, in terms of the page, you're going to get all that as well. In terms of projects coming up, we're working on a few different things. We have a piece of land that we purchased here north of the city in Toronto. And, we're going to be doing there's a structure already on there, a house already on there. We're going to be holding retreats and stuff out of there, covering a number of different topics. We're also going to be building a off-grid sustainable home that is modern. And the idea behind that is we want to be able to, build a home that when people look at it and people go in it and when they experience it, it is a logical next step between the houses they're used to today and one that they would feel comfortable moving in, but that employs a lot of the factors of sustainability and off-grid capability so that we can grow our own food and have our own stuff to whatever degree is possible, so that we can move towards that type of world. And I think what it's going to help do is show people the possibility and allow people to experience it so they know that this is real. Hey, we can do this, you know? So that's a project we got going on as well.
That's super exciting. I'm sure a lot of people will, especially given your broad range of interests. I mean, to bring that into focus on that particular topic, I think is great, because so many times when people do that, there is a whole set of politics that come with it and worldview things that come with it. So it's interesting now that we know a little bit more about your worldview, that it's interesting to see what you're going to bring to that project, if you know what I mean, because there's a lot of different agendas behind that sustainability, new housing kind of meme thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different ways to look at it, and there's so many different things to touch on. And ultimately, you know, this is going to come down to, with anything that physically or systematically happens in the world, there is a consciousness shift or a shift in the way we see things that has to go along with it, you know?
Right. So you don't have to come at it from this post-apocalyptic kind of doomsday thing, or you don't have to come against it as a survivor against the prepper against the government takeover. You're coming at it from a totally positive shift in consciousness. We can do better. We can create any future we want kind of thing. Hey, what about this future? That's what I hear you saying.
Absolutely. And the other side to it is, hey, here's the technology that's been available forever that's being kept from us. And the only reason why it's being kept from us is slavery, control, and you know, being able to sort of implement a system that, you know, doesn't sort of stop the cycle of having people to constantly have their heads down and working. As much as that sounds like a conspiracy, if you look at the entire money system, it only causes one thing, and it's perpetual slavery. And that's a fact, you know, like you can throw different opinions about it, but when you really look at it, that's what it does. And I think there's a ton of possibility when it comes to technology and what's available and what's out there that can completely shift that. And, you know, we fear what that would look like, because we may not know what a world would look like if things weren't how we're experiencing it today. And that's okay. We have those fears, but we want to do the job of showing people and start making them comfortable with the possibilities and show them solutions that they can start digesting and start pushing through their minds and their hearts and feeling it out and going, actually, you know what, this does make sense. And the more people we get open to that, and the more times, you know, people start understanding that, the more you're going to start seeing this stuff happen practically. So that it's an important thing to do is showing people the physical solutions. Again, going back to we're mental beings, we're physical beings with a body, and we also have that spiritual side. You have to be showing people and cultivating each side of that for them to really understand the shifts and the stuff that's happening, right? But yeah, in terms of other projects, we have a couple of other films we're working on. One is in the realm of sort of the ET and the disclosure. We're working with some very, very interesting people on that one. No release date or anything yet, but it's a very, very interesting direction with that. Very, very much like no film that sort of is out there in terms of the extraterrestrial space. It's very demystified. It's very, not about, okay, well, wow, this crazy thing's going on. It's more so like, this is the reality of the situation sort of thing. Also working on the film right now, it's sort of in the very, very early stages, but it alluded to what we've been talking about here, which is called Unscientific as of now. And it touches on the idea that so much of what we were doing in terms of science and is unscientific, and what that's causing, and what the solution and how we can sort of get out of that is.
Well, that's terrific. It's been great introducing folks to such a broad range of issues that you talk about. Again, our guest has been Joe Martino. The site is collectiveevolution.com. Please check it out. I think you'll be really glad that you did. Joe, thanks again so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
Thanks again to Joe Martino from Collective Evolution for joining me today on Skeptico. I'd have one question to tee up from this interview, since we talk so much about consciousness science, and in this interview we talked about consciousness science a tiny bit, but what we really talked about was consciousness more as this collective force that moves and motivates us and seems to have a significant impact as it shifts or as we shift it. So the question is, are we experiencing such a consciousness shift right now? Is there a shift in consciousness underway, and what might that shift be? So, of course, the place to let me know your thoughts on that are through the Skeptico website at skeptiko.com. From there, you can bounce on over to the forum or leave a comment right there on the website. Reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter, however you see fit to do it. The important thing is to connect with me, connect to the show, connect with other people that enjoy this material. Of course, while you're at the website, be sure to check out any of our over 300 previous interviews, all available there for download for free. You can also subscribe in all the usual ways so that you're up to date on what's going on. By the way, we never ask for donations. We never take any donations of any kind. The only thing we ask you to do is to, if you enjoy the show, share it with other people and spread the information. So I guess that'll do it for this episode. I have a couple of really interesting interviews coming up. I do hope you stay with me for all of that. Until next time, take care and bye for now.